come on in.
And now, back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
The kids love him.
And your host,
welcome to paradise,
Bill Frank.
Welcome back. In an age of growing entitlement, you're going to meet an author who believes that we should suck it up, do our jobs, do it right. Nobody's coming to save us. If it's to be, it's up to me, and any other cliche that I can throw at you. He's drawn on the ancient philosophers of Stoicism and applied their principles to modern life in an attempt to show the universal truths of how to overcome obstacles. We'll discuss his philosophy and show you how you can use it to improve your daily life. Ryan Holiday is a media strategist for controversial clients. He is the best-selling author of Trust Me, I'm Lying, about the new era of media and culture, and the new ebook Growth Hacker Marketing. His writing has appeared in the New York Observer, Forbes, Fast Company, and many other outlets. He currently lives in Austin, Texas, with his rebellious puppy, Hanno, and two pet goats. Joining us from Los Angeles. Hi, Ryan. How are you today?
Hi, it's good to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being here on the Bill Frank Show. I appreciate it. And let's get right to it. Your new book is titled The Obstacle is the Way, The Timeless Art of Turning Trials into Triumphs. And in the book, you sort of revive the principles of Stoicism to illustrate how people overcome trials and moved it to triumph. So let's, for people who may have forgotten it or maybe never even knew what Stoicism was, give us the basic rundown. What are the principles of Stoicism?
Sure. So the book and the title, it actually comes from a line from one of the most prominent Stoics, the Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius. And every night he would sit down and he would write these little notes to himself about how to be a better person, right? And it's a pretty sort of stunning concept. You have the most powerful man in the world, and all he's doing is trying to sort of improve himself. And so the book takes its cue from this line. He says, "The impediment to action advances action. What stands in the way becomes the way." And it's sort of this Stoic idea that, look, we don't control what happens to us. We control how we respond to what happens to us. And so what I wanted to do in the book was unpack that little sentence and show how you actually do it in your real life.
Okay, and you do. And you break it down really into three steps, the perception, action, and will. And the perception deals with the mind, of course, action with action of the body. And the will is sort of the heart and the soul. So break it down for us. In particular, let's start with the perception, because I think that's where many people fail when they're confronted with an obstacle of any kind.
Sure. Well, I think what happens is most of the time when we face an adverse situation, the first thing we do is we make it worse, right? We tell ourselves that our life is over. We tell ourselves that this is very unfair, that it's the worst thing to ever happen, that we're never going to recover. And what the Stoics talk about is this sort of domestication of your emotions. And it's not to say you don't have emotions, but you separate, you know, harmful emotions from constructive emotions. And you stop and you say, okay, is freaking out about this, is that going to make this any better? How can I stop for a second? How can I see this objectively and clearly? And then orient myself for a form of action that's actually going to be effective, rather than just sort of, you know, assaging whatever emotional tantrum I threw in light of what happened.
All right, but this is where Stoics get a bad rap, because basically what you're saying is, suck it up, sweetheart. Yeah, you can have your momentary lapse into emotionalism, that's great, but suck it up, you got to deal with the problem. And Stoics come across as being hardened, being very, very unemotional, etc. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's interesting. There's Stoicism, which sort of has this rap, and then there's Epicureanism, which is another philosophy that also has a sort of a rap of being very gluttonous on the other end. And both of those are just complete mischaracterizations of what the actual philosophers are saying. What you have to think about is, you know, when Marcus Aurelius or Seneca or Epictetus, any number of the Stoic philosophers were writing down advice to themselves, they weren't saying, like, hey, don't forget to laugh at jokes, or like, hey, kids are fun to play with, or hey, you know, sex feels good, because we don't need reminders of that. But what we do need help with is sort of controlling how we can freak out about things, or sometimes what our instincts tell us to do are actually the most harmful thing that we can do. So the Stoics are sort of trying to practice reining in some of those destructive emotions, not that they couldn't feel anything at all. In fact, they do feel it, and they're just reminding themselves, you know, hey, take a minute, breathe. Let's look at this objectively.
All right. My guest is Ryan Holiday. Ryan, I want to pursue this one step farther, if I can, please. What role does optimism then play in your Stoic philosophy?
Well, I actually think it's very important. I don't think that Stoicism and optimism are in conflict with each other. In fact, this Stoic idea of saying, hey, this bad thing that happened to me, I can actually make it into a positive thing if I respond properly, to me is sort of a formula for, you know, great optimism. So when Marcus Aurelius is saying, you know, hey, you know, someone hurt my feelings, someone stole from me, someone I know close to me died, something bad happened, in fact, this is an opportunity for me to grow. This is an opportunity for me to improve. And like we were talking sort of right before we got on the air, I woke up this morning with food poisoning and that didn't feel good. And then I thought to myself, okay, I can lay in bed and I can just feel awful, or I can say, hey, this is a chance for me to sort of tough something out, to handle this thing by myself, because I'm traveling alone this week. And I'm going to get through this, and I'm going to be better off for it because I approached it with that attitude.
All right. That's very good. Now, the bigger question is, you've just written this book, The Obstacle is the Way. Why did you write it now? Do you believe that this is an age of entitlement that we're going through and that people need to be awakened from that?
Sure. I mean, obviously, I think Stoicism is timeless. Like, here we are talking about philosophy that was originated, you know, many thousands of years ago, literally. And Stoicism has always had a place in sort of every major society and era. That being said, I think, you know, being a millennial, graduating into the financial crisis, I watched so many of my friends sort of go like, oh, this is bad. I've got to move home with my parents. Or, oh, this is bad. I got to go back to school. Or, oh, this is bad. All my dreams are ruined. And the Stoic attitude would say, look, that's not the case. It's on you. It's your job to make the most of whatever situation you happen to be in. And so I do think there's a particular relevance and resonance with the message, but I also tried to write something that I think will stand the test of time.
All right. Well, then, Ryan, let's apply your principles to overcoming obstacles. I mean, why and how is Stoicism the best way to overcome obstacles?
Well, I think in a lot of ways it's the only way. You know, running from an obstacle doesn't accomplish anything, but deciding to face it head on, deciding to derive some benefit from this sort of external thing is the only way to get something out of an obstacle. So it's like you can say that a failure of a business or a failure of a book or whatever you're working on, you can say that it's bad, or you can say like, look, this is a lesson for me. I'm going to be stronger for the next one. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z differently this time. Mm-hmm. That's what Stoicism is designed to inculcate and allow people to do.
All right, so it comes back to the perception of the situation as it is. And
sure.
That brings me to the next point that I want to make is, in the action section of your philosophy, you really discuss how perfectionism is the enemy of overcoming obstacles.
Sure.
Yet our current education system, however, is based on perfectionism. I mean, there's one right answer for every question. You fill in the blank. You put your name at the top of the page, and so forth and so on. So the question that I have for you is, how must we alter our education system to better prepare students for the challenges in life? You just talked about millennials jumping into life. How would you change things if you were emperor for the day?
Well, I think that one of the problems with the education system is that it's all about, like, look, if you check off these boxes or you fulfill this criteria, everything will be taken care of for you. If you do good in high school, you get into a good college. If you get into a good college, you get a good job. And that sort of takes people's agency out of the situation. It says, like, okay, as long as you follow these rules, you may or may not be successful. When really we should be teaching kids, it's like, okay, whatever situation you find yourself in, it's on you to make the most of it. Don't sit around and wait for Google to come offer you your dream job. It's about making that job for yourself. And you know, we exist in a world where people are required to be far more entrepreneurial, where the safety net is gone, yet the education system is such that you could be easily forgiven for thinking that if you get into Harvard, you're set for life.
You're meeting Ryan Holiday, the author of the new book, The Obstacle is the Way, The Timeless Art of Turning Trials into Triumph. And Ryan, another question along this same line is, do you think that Stoic thinking and Stoic behavior varies by generation? I mean, it seems to me that Tom Brokaw dubbed the greatest generation, those are the people that were born in the Great Depression and World War II, that they really embodied these characteristics more than any other generation since them. Is this generational?
What I say in the book is, you know, you might think that whatever you're going through right now is really tough, but you've got to wrap your head around the fact that during the Great Depression, people were going through the exact same thing and the Great Depression. So we come from a long line of people going back hundreds of years and then thousands of years who lived in far tougher environments than we do now. and we are their heirs, right? We are quite literally the children of those people. And so we are clearly capable of so much more. We've just sort of, one, those muscles have atrophied, and then two, I think our belief in ourselves has also atrophied. And so I want people to think of, the reason I tell historical stories in the book is to get people to go like, man, you know, this person went through something that's far worse than what I'm going through. I think I'm going to be able to handle the fact that, you know, an investor backed out of my company, or the PowerPoint presentation went down, or, you know, or whatever it is, you're stuck in traffic, whatever the obstacle is, you can do this and more, I promise.
All right. Is it geographical? You look at China, you look at Vietnam, places, India, for that matter, places that are on the rise where you've got a growing middle class. I mean, in China, if you're one in a million, literally that means there are 1,500 other people just like you.
Sure.
Is it geographical as well?
Well, I don't know if it's geographical. I do think it's cultural, and certain cultures stress certain virtues other than you know, over others. I do think there's an interesting connection between Zen Buddhism and Stoicism, which I talk a little bit about in the book. But I also, you know, I also think geographically, if you come from a very unpredictable, hard, scrabble kind of place, that's going to toughen you up in a way that, it, you know, living in the cushy suburbs might not.
All right. My guest is Ryan Holiday. Ryan, we've come to the lightning round. So in this round, I'm going to throw some names at you because you used a lot of examples in your book, very famous people, and they're all great. But I want to use some people that maybe weren't in the book. And I want to start with John F. Kennedy. And I want to talk specifically about his foreign policy because, you know, it started out on a rocky road. He met Khrushchev in Vienna, had a really bad time of that. Khrushchev came to New York and he addressed the UN, and that's when he banged his shoe on the podium. Then up goes the Berlin Wall. We had the Bay of Pigs controversy, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and finally Vietnam. Did John F. Kennedy learn and apply the principles of Stoicism to his foreign policy?
You know, John F. Kennedy is a very interesting person in that, one, he obviously came from a very upper crust lifestyle. His father was very successful. He was sort of born with a silver spoon in his mouth. And yet there was this toughness and ferocity about him, you know, going back to his heroism in World War II. I definitely think you can make the case that there was a clear learning curve between the Bay of Pigs and how botched that was handled, and then how he turned around and handled the Cuban Missile Crisis, which literally could have ended the world as we know it. So I think you see John F. Kennedy get stronger as he goes, and that's, you know, certainly a very Stoic concept, and I think is very admirable.
It is, but then on the flip side of that, right after the Cuban Missile Crisis, we see the escalation in Vietnam. So it makes you wonder, did he really learn the lessons, or did he just luck out?
Yeah, you know, there's the Halberstam book, The Best and the Brightest. I think there was definitely a certain naive superiority in the Kennedy administration, whereas the Stoics sort of stressed humility and self-awareness and self-criticism, and that definitely, you know, impaired their judgment on numerous occasions.
All right, let me throw another name at you. Elon Musk, the co-founder of PayPal, SpaceX, Tesla, SolarCity, and the imaginary Hyperloop.
Sure.
Does he exhibit Stoic principles?
Well, look, I think everyone who is successful exhibits some Stoic principle at one form or another. They wouldn't be successful, right? He's created numerous companies. He's sort of persevered through all sorts of doubt and media crises and things like that. So that part of Elon I see as being very Stoic and very admirable. I also see, you know, when I, as a marketer and as a publicist, I watch him often hang himself very publicly when he reacts to critics or little controversies. I get the sense that he has a fairly thin skin or can be very defensive about stuff. So I wonder if a Stoic was sort of sitting down with him and walking him through something, that would probably be where they would focus.
Very good insight. My guest is Ryan Holiday, author of the book, The Obstacle is the Way. I'm going to throw a negative example at you and ask, Adolf Hitler, during World War II, did he exhibit Stoic principles?
Well, I would say obviously not. Not only was his entire agenda motivated by hate and self-loathing and greed and aggressiveness, but he turned on everyone around him. He insisted on, you know, sort of complete control despite a total lack of qualifications for any of those things. And he killed literally millions of people because of all of this. I would say that he is the opposite of Stoicism in almost every sense. I think you could argue that in terms of philosopher kings or philosopher leaders, Adolf Hitler was probably the opposite of that in every way you could imagine.
All right, and final name on my list in the lightning round, you. You've got a very interesting background. I mean, you dropped out of college at 19. You apprenticed under Robert Greene, who wrote the book Power. Now you're the director of marketing in American Apparel, and your work in advertising is known truly internationally. And your strategies are being used as case studies by Twitter, YouTube, Google, and you've been written about in Ad Age, New York Times, Fast Company, etc. How are you applying the Stoic principles?
Well, I mean, I was introduced to Stoicism when I was 19 years old. It's been the philosophy that's helped me in the stress and often overwhelming situations that I found myself in, sort of being above my level, being above my age, you know, dealing with difficult decisions that I didn't have that much training for. So I've always tried to apply Stoicism. I also understand, though, that I'm relatively young on the spectrum. This is very much a learning curve, and I've got a long way to go. So I don't go around calling myself a Stoic. What I do use, though, is the principles and exercises in Stoicism in my daily life to the best of my ability. And I can say, you know, I'm not in the book for this reason, but I can say that they have been of great value and great relief and comfort to me over the years.
You're listening to Ryan Holiday here on The Bill Frank Show. Ryan, I'm going to bring both of your worlds colliding together here if I can.
Okay.
Stoicism from your latest book, The Obstacle is the Way, and the media from your previous book, Trust Me, I'm Lying. So apply your Stoic principles to the obstacles that traditional media, newspapers, radio, TV, movies, that they're facing today. You know, declining revenues, declining audiences, fragmented audiences, more and more choices. How would a Stoic approach that particular problem?
Well, I think a Stoic would approach it, one, very pragmatically and honestly. They wouldn't get caught up in some of the sort of delusions of grandeur or, you know, nostalgia that I think is holding back a lot of media companies. And then they would say, like, look, if I have a job to do, if my job is to promote this company or to build this brand or whatever, I'm going to do whatever it takes to do that. But I'm going to also sort of put in my own principles. I'm going to follow my own sort of internal compass. So for me, as a marketer, I watched my sort of self get absorbed into this world, and I said, you know what? I don't know if this is what I like. I don't know if this is good. I don't know what the end game is here. I ended up blowing the book, which I wanted to be sort of a confessional or an expose, precisely because I found it harder and harder to rectify my sort of personal conscience with the work that I was doing and the work that I saw other people doing every day.
All right. Ryan, I'm going to ask you to pull back now to 30,000 feet and kind of look at the bigger picture for just a minute. In what ways would applying the principles of Stoicism improve the world if everybody applied them together?
Sure. I think it makes us more resilient. I think it makes us more tough. I think it makes us more forgiving and compassionate towards other people. And I ultimately think it helps us get more accomplished because instead of being overwhelmed or stuck, we are constantly moving. We're like water. It doesn't matter what you put in its way. It's gonna go around it. It's going to go over it. It's going to go under it. That's what I think, you know, society needs more of. And that's how we're going to solve the big problems that we all face.
You're meeting Ryan Holiday, author of the book, The Obstacle is the Way, The Timeless Art of Turning Trials into Triumph. Ryan, what do you want readers to take away from your book, The Obstacle is the Way?
Well, look, I wrote this book. I want it to be something that people are intrigued by, and then they read over and over again when they face problems in their life. But I think if I had to distill it into one sentence, it would be this idea. It's like, look, you don't control what happens to you. And so that means bad things and good things are going to happen. But what you do control is how you respond to those things. Do good things make you better? And do bad things, do you endure those and become better from them as well? And if you can crack that formula, which, you know, I've tried to do in the book, you're gonna be amazed at how far you're able to go while other people are stuck or stymied or held back.
Ryan, what did you get out of writing the book?
Well, one, it was definitely an ambitious undertaking. I think it made me grow as a writer and as a thinker. You know, having written all this stuff down, I'm now sort of forced to follow my own advice on a daily basis. I've got to ask myself, like, you know, when I get in a car accident or when my house gets broken into, how am I going to respond? How is this obstacle going to be a way for me? How am I going to benefit from this? And if the more I ask myself that question, the better things seem to get.
My guest has been Ryan Holiday, author of the book, The Obstacle is the Way. Ryan, if people are intrigued by what they hear, maybe they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
Yeah, so the book is obviously available bookstores everywhere, Amazon.com. It's called The Obstacle is the Way. My website is ryanholiday.net, where I actually do a reading recommendation email where I recommend books every month. And then I'm on Twitter at twitter.com/RyanHoliday.
Oh, that is great. Ryan, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks so much for having me.